Hey guys, it's Albert. We've got so much to get to. Jam-packed week of NFL news. We're also going to be bringing an old friend back. And as always, we'll get to your questions in the mailbag. Let's go. All right, welcome back. It's week two of the new MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're going to get right into it. Tons of news this week. Some of it on the field, some of it off the field. It is Tuesday morning right now as we record this in New York City. And because of where I'm sitting right now, because of the point in the day it is, I don't know that we could start anywhere else but with our first news topic, which is the Giants benching of quarterback Eli Manning. The Giants right now sit at 0-2. They've lost to the Cowboys. They've lost to the Bills. And I just, my main takeaway when I look at this is where the Giants are in a couple different areas that's dictated this sort of move. Number one, where they are with Daniel Jones. The quarterback has to be ready to go. They were impressed with his poise in the preseason. They were impressed with the way that he was able to take hits. They were impressed with his improvement week after week, day over day. And so that's the first piece of it. You have to be ready. You have to feel like your quarterback's ready to go. That's self-explanatory. I don't need to tell you that. Number two, I think this is something that's flown under the radar that's important here. Their comfort level with their offensive line and what that has meant for Eli Manning through the first 2 weeks and what it could mean for Daniel Jones. You don't want to put your young quarterback out there in a bad situation, even if he is a guy who showed that he could take a hit. Daniel Jones showed that at Duke. You don't want to put your guy out there in a situation where his confidence could be crushed within a few weeks of getting in there, where you might have to pull him out or he might get hurt. And the job that they've done quietly rebuilding the offensive line, signing Nate Solder, drafting Will Hernandez, all of the things that they've done over the last couple of years to rebuild that offensive line, and what Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur have done to invest in that area, I think is the second piece of this, another big piece of it. And the third piece, listen, the Giants knew. I mean, all you had to do is watch how they played against the Cowboys, look at where the Eagles' potential is. They're not competing in the NFC East this year. And so I think if you feel like you can protect him and you can put him in a good enough environment and he's ready and you're not contending right now, it makes sense to get him the work in games as a rookie. We've seen the benefit other guys have had from it. Of course, there have been guys where, you know, it's worked the other way. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, more recently guys who are redshirted early in their careers and benefited from it. But if the guy can handle it and you're not contending and you feel like you've got a good enough situation where he's not going to get the crap kicked out of him, then it makes sense to do something like this. And so I think the time is right. The Giants understand where they are organizationally. When Dave Gettleman and Pat Shurmur arrived in East Rutherford about 20, 21 months ago, they understood the sort of rebuild that they were undertaking. And a big part of any rebuild like that is finding a quarterback. They feel like they found one. And now it's time to start to get him work. And as much as anything else, you're going to have 14 games of evidence, health permitting, of what he can do. He's going to have 14 games of experience. And you're going to have 14 games of looking at what it looks like around him that'll help you build when you get to the next offseason. All right, number two, we're going to get more into the injuries and count and point counterpoint with an old friend of ours. But can't avoid this in the news topics. Saints lose Drew Brees. He will, in all likelihood, be down. My guess would be until after the Saints bye. They come back off their bye on November 10th. My guess would be that would be right in the area when they would expect to see him back. I would just say this. This is why you pay a backup quarterback $7.25 million. We're going to get more into the particulars of this in a little bit. Again, in point, counterpoint. But I would just say that the reason why backup quarterbacks make this much money isn't because these teams think they're going to come in and save the day if the quarterback goes down for the year. Bottom line is, in the NFL, that position is so important. And the way the league's set up right now, it's impossible to – it's so hard to win without being really, really good at that position. And the Eagles, of course, a couple years ago would be an outlier. the idea, you don't want to see your season go down the tubes if you lose your starter for 4 weeks, for 6 weeks, for 8 weeks. You're screwed if you lose him for the season. But if you lose him for a month or 2 months, you want to have somebody who can come in there and steady the ship. Why is that so valuable? Well, look at where the Saints were before Drew Brees. Look at all the quarterbacks they went through before they got to Drew Brees. Each year that you have with Drew Brees as your quarterback is precious, especially when he's this age. And so if you've got a bad backup quarterback situation and you're losing him for the next 6 weeks and you go 0-6 or you go 1-5, now all of a sudden there's not much chance you're making the playoffs. But if you got a guy who can maybe get you to 4-2, over the next 6 weeks, again, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in depth in a little bit. Well, now all of a sudden, okay, now you're 5-3. Drew Brees is coming back. He's healthy. He's rested. You haven't put more miles on his body. He's fresh and ready to go for November and December, and you're still in the race. And so I think that's why it's so valuable to have a guy like Teddy Bridgewater and why you pay that guy $7.25 million. Because of how precious each year you have with a quarterback like Drew Brees is. And so you want to be able to sustain your level to a reasonable degree if you lose him for 4, 6, 8 weeks. And I think the Saints believe they can do that with Teddy Bridgewater in there. Number three, the Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger. This is another one we're going to get into in point counterpoint. Just really quick, give you guys the rundown on where I think the Steelers are right now with Mason Rudolph. This is a guy who, coming out of college, was seen as the term that they would use is toolsy. He's got size. He's got athleticism. He's got a big arm. He can throw with touch. But he comes from one of these systems where he's sort of playing in a little bit of a bubble. And a lot of coaches look at guys who come out of those sorts of systems, Oklahoma State's one of them, as sort of 7-on-7 quarterbacks. So he was seen as raw. He was seen as somebody who needed development. People weren't sure whether or not he'd be good against pressure. That's something obviously you're going to see a lot of at the NFL level. And so Mason Rudolph, what we see from Mason Rudolph when he takes that field this week and for the rest of the season is going to tell us what we need to know about how far he's come along, because the tools are there. He was just a projection coming out of college. And I think, as much as anything else, the trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick on Monday night was proof positive that maybe they believe a little bit more in Mason Rudolph than the general public does. And so I think they're worth watching. It's a talented team. We'll talk about this a little bit more. But, you know, again, they're going to have to win a little bit of a different way. But they're going to be an interesting team just because, you know, they've got this quarterback who was drafted behind Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. Like, he wound up going in the third round, but definitely has the talent, has the ability to play in the NFL. And pretty soon, very soon, we're going to figure out how far along he's come. Number four, news topic number four, the Patriots and Antonio Brown on Sunday showed potential, showed why Bill Belichick would stick his neck out and make this trade. He is a fabulous football player. In 24 snaps, he was targeted 8 times, and he got a touch on a 9th snap. So that means 9 out of 24 snaps, the ball was coming his way. He finished on Sunday with 4 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown. We know he's a great player. The question is how long this lasts. And I just think it's really interesting the way the Patriots have handled this in this sort of see no evil, hear no evil type of way, and pushing it out there that they didn't know about the lawsuit that was filed last Tuesday, that they didn't know that that was coming before signing him, that Robert Kraft wouldn't have signed him. And now we've got more information. Robert Klemko, the site, did a great job this for the last couple of weeks putting together a story on who Antonio Brown is. So now there's more information in there on just what the Patriots are bringing into their building. And we've already seen some of the social media stuff. We know that Bill Belichick makes allowances for talent. We've seen it before. This isn't the first time he's rolled the dice. Randy Moss, Corey Dillon, Albert Haynesworth, Chad Johnson in the draft. Guys like Aaron Hernandez, who had a ton of background stuff on him coming out of Florida. We've seen them make these. We've seen them take these risks in the past. Like most NFL teams, they'll allow for more the greater the talent is. We saw how great the talent is on Sunday. I'm just going to be fascinated to see the way the Antonio Brown thing unfolds, because this is a guy who has always played by his own rules and has actually said, like, I don't want to play somewhere where I can't play by my own rules. Okay, and then the flip side of that game on Sunday, news topic number five, the Dolphins trade Fitzpatrick to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a first-round pick. They now have three first-round picks, two second-round picks. They'll probably have two third-round picks. They're projected to have a comp pick for Juwan James, who signed with the Broncos in the offseason. Seven picks in the first three rounds. My understanding is under an edict from ownership to find a long-term quarterback. Maybe that's Tua Tagovailoa. Maybe that's Justin Herbert. Maybe they even wait another year. Maybe it's Trevor Lawrence. But they've ripped the Band-Aid off. From a team-building standpoint, I like what they're doing. The question is how this works functionally. And we saw the challenges the Browns went through in 2016 and 17 doing it this way. And I would just say, I think Brian Flores is the right guy to handle this, but man, does he have a challenge in front of him. Because that is the demanding program he is putting in. That is a demanding, tough program that he has put in. He's doing all the same stuff that Matt Patricia did in Detroit last year. And that's a tough sell when you're not giving guys immediate results. That's a tough sell when guys are looking around and they're seeing the best players in the team traded. That's a tough sell when all the guys in the locker room know that this is a total rebuild and that they could be the next one gone. You're asking the world of them, and they may not. They have no idea whether they're going to be there in 3 weeks, in 3 months, the end of the year. They don't know. And so Brian Flores certainly has his work cut out for him. If this is a competitive team in December, doesn't matter what the record is. If this is a competitive team in December that's still fighting, that's locked into what Brian Flores is selling, I think they really could be going places. But it's going to be difficult for Brian Flores to get there. All right, that's enough of me. Right after this break, we're going to get to our point counterpoint segment with a voice you guys may remember.
The MMQB podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. Let me ask you, is there anything better than watching football? Of course there is. Watching football with a DraftKings lineup on the line, especially this week. DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy football, is giving new users a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit when you sign up with our code MMQB. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, throw, and catch mean more with a DraftKings lineup on the line. It's simple. Just draft your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. And by the way, if he's healthy on Sunday, this is the week Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams is gonna take off. Plus, all new and existing users get a deposit bonus up to $500. That's some extra cash to play with this football season. Nothing adds to the sweat of watching the game quite like having a shot at over $1.5 million in prizes. Download the DraftKings app now and use code MMQB. For a limited time, both new and existing users can get a deposit bonus up to $500. New users, don't forget to enter our code MMQB to get a free shot at over $1.5 million in prizes with your first deposit. That's code MMQB only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Deposit bonus requires a 25 times playthrough. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. We're also brought to you by Legacy Box. You know, every Christmas, our family tradition was to gather around and watch a local public access holiday special featuring my mom's preschool class in which my little brother was enrolled. It was fantastic. We had a confused Santa, kids literally tripping over each other, and so much nose picking. It was an old VHS tape, though, and because of that, it had been years since we saw it. That is, until we found Legacy Box. Legacy Box is the world's largest, most trusted digitizer of home movies and photos. Send your Legacy Box filled with old home movies and pictures, and they'll do the rest, professionally digitizing your moments onto a thumb drive, digital download, or DVD. They have easy-to-follow instructions and safety barcodes included for every item. You'll receive all your original recorded moments back, along with perfectly preserved digital copies. Plus, get personalized email updates every step of the way. There's never been a better time to digitally preserve your memories. Visit LegacyBox.com today to get started. Plus, for a limited time, they're offering our listeners an exclusive discount. Go to LegacyBox.com/save to get 40% off your first order. Go to LegacyBox.com/save and save 40% today. Get started preserving your past.
All right, for this week's Point Counterpoint, I'm bringing in an old friend of the pod, and longtime listeners are going to remember him, and thank you for the loyalty of the people who have stuck around for the last 2 years to know that Andy Gresh was once the star of this podcast. Gresh, what's happening?
That's a little much. You want to get into Bill's Mafia? I can reestablish myself very quickly.
Well, we'll eventually get to the Buffalo Bills at some point, but I don't know if it's going to be this week, because what we're going to do this week, the Bills are fairly healthy. The Bills have been playing well. Maybe this isn't the week to take the shots at the Bills, Gresh. I don't know. I know you're always game for that.
Yes.
But this week, what we're going to do for Point Counterpoint, injuries are the big story in the NFL this week. We went over some of those off the top. And so what I want to do here is I want to go through each of the teams that suffered or have suffered big-time injuries. And what we're going to do is we're going to basically say, is the team going to be okay, or is the team going to be not okay? And so, Gresh, I think we got to start with the quarterbacks. And let's kick it off with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who lose Ben Roethlisberger to an elbow injury for the season. So he is done. Mason Rudolph is the new starting quarterback there. On Monday night, they make the move to trade for Minkah Fitzpatrick, which I think is a message to the locker room that there's a belief in Mason Rudolph that the season isn't over. I mean, this is a team, and Michael Hawley tweeted this out last night, that has had a first-round pick every year since 1968, which is staggering. They have not gone into an NFL draft without a first-round pick in my lifetime, your lifetime, Gresh, in over 50 years. So is all of that, the Fitzpatrick trade, the circling the wagons behind Mason Rudolph, is that real? Or are they going to be okay?
No, they're not going to be okay. And even though Mason Rudolph, Burt, looks good and he appears to be a guy who played some pretty good football, whenever people start to scheme against him, you had James Conner who did get dinged up, and if that guy's got a nurse injuries, there's problems. Look, it's interesting that the Steelers are deciding to do this now, right? They lose Roethlisberger, so what do? Let's double down and spend a first-round pick on a safety who will probably come in and play well and do a good job. But at the end of the day, I don't know if Minkah Fitzpatrick is going to have the kind of impact on the Steelers' defense that Troy Polamalu had at one point in time. And while I'm not out on Mason Rudolph, I just think that this overturns the apple cart in Pittsburgh. The one thing they were always able to count on offensively was Ben Roethlisberger, and that is now gone. And I just think they're going to be an average team from here
on. I think they
got to
win a different way, Gresh. I mean, like, that's it, you know? Like, James Conner's going to have to stay healthy. They don't have great depth in the backfield. Jalen Samuels behind him. They've built behind that offensive line, and they've poured capital into that defense. And one thing that's interesting about drafting trading for Fitzpatrick, it comes a year after they drafted Terrell Edmonds in the first round, and they moved up this year to go and get Devin Bush. And so you can see where they're building up the middle of the defense. They've got good interior defensive linemen and have had good interior defensive linemen for a while, and Stephen Tuitt and Cam Hayward. They have to win a different way. That's it. I mean, like, they're going to have to win behind running game and defense. And Mason Rudolph's reputation coming out of Oklahoma State was Big athletic kid, can make the throws, didn't take a ton of hits, so you don't know how he's going to react to pressure in his face. And he came into the league because of the system that he played in, a little raw. And so if you want that kid to come along, you're going to have to win a different way. And I think I'm with you on this. I just don't know that they can build like an old school Steelers team that won, say, the way that they did when Tommy Maddox was the quarterback. You know, I think that that would have to be the formula.
Well, maybe they can kick more field goals whenever they're down 20-0 on the road. And great genius decisions by Mike Tomlin, I'm sure, will help them along the way.
Okay. Injury number two, Drew Brees has a torn ligament in the thumb on his throwing hand. These are tough things to come back from. This is a 6 to 8 week injury to get back on the field. And even then, you're not totally positive where the guy's going to be when he gets back out there, how long it's going to take him to come back to be back to full strength. Jay Cutler went through something like this in 2016 with the Bears, I believe, but got hurt right around the same juncture, was back on Halloween, wound up getting hurt again after that. So, Gresh, Saints, are they going to be okay or not okay?
Well, I think the Saints, Bert, have a much better chance to be okay, and I think they will survive and figure it out because they invested in the backup quarterback spot. Now, that said, I did some digging on the Teddy Bridgewater numbers last night, and the guy quarterbacked an 11-5 football team, and he threw the ball under 500 yep. times. That's not going to be what they do in New Orleans. If anything, it's probably going to be the other way around, where they're going to have to sort of shrink the passing game a little bit. I don't think they're going to be able to press it down the field. And that team has not been without Drew Brees for as long as I right. can remember. I mean, since they won the Super Bowl, that guy has been incredibly durable. So you lose a big chunk of your identity out on the field, and especially offensively. So how does Sean Payton become the guy that kind of leads that offensive group? And this is really going to put his offensive prowess to the test. Again, Teddy Bridgewater, a functional player, a guy you can win with in the league, and if Drew Brees doesn't come back in 6 to 8 weeks, then to me the Saints really have a problem. But I think they're going to be able to patchwork and kind of, you know, manage this. But Teddy Bridgewater is also going to have to improve his ability to throw the ball for the Saints to be able to survive this. And by the way, I don't know about you, Bert, I ain't buying 6 weeks on a thumb for a quarterback. Ain't no way. This has got 2 months or more written all over it, in
okay,
my
so
opinion.
So today is September 17th. He was hurt on September 15th, right? So they come out of their bye
yes.
on November 10th. That's about 2 months, okay? So, like, let's just play with that as the time frame. I gave you
sure.
Jay Cutler coming back on Halloween. They play on October 27th. Let's just say for the sake of argument they missed that game. Let's just say for the sake of argument that's the last game he misses. Okay, so that's. I think the next 2 weeks are key. I think splitting the next 2 weeks would be a win for them. They got the Seahawks and the Cowboys. If they can split mm-hmm. the next 2 weeks, the four games after that, Bucks, Jaguars, Bears, Cardinals, that's manageable. Like, I just look at this and I say, if this team can come out of the first, what would that be? That'd be the first 8 weeks of the season, right? Because their bye is right in the middle. If they can come out of this at 5-3, that ain't bad. And you can still contend off of that. And yep. I tell you what, like, I think Bridgewater can be functional in the offense because this is as good a team as Drew Brees has had around him. I really believe that. They've drafted so well the last 3 or 4 years. It's on offense with, you know, look at their offensive line with Ryan Ramczyk bookending now, Teron Armstead, Eric McCoy, who looks like he can really play at center. They draft Michael Thomas. They draft Alvin Kamara. They draft Tre'Quan Smith. That offense has got weapons around Teddy Bridgewater. He's not going to have to be a superstar. And I think so much of it with a young quarterback is about environment anyway, like what's around you, right? And I think Teddy Bridgewater is being dropped into a nice environment there with Sean Payton being the one who's pulling the strings, and Pete Carmichael, a guy who's been the offensive coordinator there for a decade. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean, now they've got legitimate talent over there. Now, I know Marshawn Lattimore had a tough one, against the Rams, but he's a very good corner. Marcus Williams at safety, Cam Jordan up front. You look at the talent they've put in place there. They're eventually going to be getting Sheldon Rankins back at defensive tackle. I look at the talent they've put together there. I think they should be able to manage the next 6 weeks. Like I look at their schedule. Look, if they can come out of that 4-2, which seems doable to me, they're 5-3 going into their bye. And here's one thing that's kind of interesting, Gresh. And I want to hear what you think about this. Do you think that this could be a blessing in disguise? Breeze looked like he faded a little bit at the end of last year. Like, this saves some miles on his body because it is a thumb, right? Like, this isn't something that when we get to December is going to debilitate him, right? So,
yeah, I would agree with that. And here's where I think it's a blessing in disguise is they're going to learn more about the other parts of their football team with Drew Brees off the field, so that when you mentioned the bye week and him maybe getting close to get back, now you can much more effectively evaluate the other parts of your football team relative to a championship run, because off of what you said, they're going to have to, you know, like Pittsburgh's going to have to do it a different way. New Orleans is going to have to rely on their running game and their defense to be able to get them through not having Brees.
And I think
out
like
there.
There's the one thing that they might miss a little bit. Mark Ingram. Like, that would have been a guy who, if they had held on to him, might have been like capable of being the identity of the offense while Brees was out. You know what I'm saying? Like, might have been like that presence that Teddy Bridgewater had early in his career with Adrian Peterson, where some of it comes off of him a little bit. But I still think it's a manageable situation. Okay. Injury situation number three. And this is sort of a twofer here. The Eagles lose Malik Jackson for the year. They're going to be without Timmy Jernigan for an extended period of time. Gresh, Eagles okay or not okay?
I think the Eagles are going to now struggle a little bit, and I had them as one of my top two teams in the NFC along with the Saints, because I thought the Rams would slide back a little bit, first place schedule, everything that goes into a Super Bowl run. And now I'm starting to get a little worried about Philadelphia, because Atlanta's got great talent, but to me, I just don't know how well they're coached and how consistent they can be on a game-in, game-out basis in terms of the Falcons. And what I saw from the Eagles was a little concerning, only because I thought they were a better football team, and I'm not seeing that. And those defensive tackles, look, they're not just sticking fat bodies in there and 350-pounders to just gobble up the run. Those days are gone. You need people that are agile, mobile, and hostile. And that's what you had there with those defensive tackles. And now those guys are either gone for the year or they're gone for a significant portion of the season. I think it forces Jim Schwartz to get creative. Good God, he blitzed almost on every down the other night against the Falcons, it felt like. But he ain't going to be able to get away with that kind of aggressiveness if they don't have some defensive linemen that are worth a damn. So I think old Schwartzy's got to go back to the drawing board. But I think what this does, Bert, to me, is this could drop the Eagles out of the 1-2 seed line and force them into a wild card round. And we know how hard it is to go to or win a Super Bowl coming out of the wild card round. So maybe this doesn't derail their season, but it might make it harder for them in the long run to get to
a Super Bowl. I would say I'm marginally concerned about the Eagles right now. And the reason why, what was their identity in 2017 when they won a championship? Their identity was through the lines of scrimmage. Like, that's why they were so good. And you look at the defensive line now, you're kicking out the depth a little bit there. You're probably going to have Akeem Spence playing next to Fletcher Cox. You're probably going to have to play Fletcher Cox more as a result of this. What effect's that going to have on him? And this is a defensive line group, remember, that is still making up for the loss of Chris Long and Michael Bennett. And so there's just, like, you don't have the strength in numbers that you've had in the past. And I combine that with, I think, a little bit of a bothersome performance, too, against Atlanta on Sunday on the offensive line. And one thing that, like, I picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl. I still think they're capable of it. I'm a little worried about the age of that offensive line, Gresh. There are three guys on that O-line that are over 30 years old, and Brandon Brooks, Jason Kelce, and Jason Peters. And there's a fourth in Lane Johnson who's 29. And so, like, the I think it's always important that teams maintain whatever their strength is. Being able to maintain that strength is important. And that's why the Eagles have worked so hard to build depth into those areas. I'm just not sure they're quite as strong as I thought they'd be coming into the year.
That's a fair criticism, and maybe Lane Johnson will get back to having fun again, since they're the only organization that has fun after winning a championship, and maybe they can get back to a divisional round or a championship
round.
Okay,
so we've been through three juggernauts now, the Steelers, the Saints, and the Eagles. We're going to throw a little bit of a curveball here and go to a rising team that loses a guy who's been an absolute rock for them for a decade. That's the San Francisco 49ers, 2-0, looked incredibly impressive in just beating the tar out of the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday on the road. They're now going to be without their left tackle, Joe Staley, for 2 months. Gresh, big deal, not a big deal. They're going to be okay, not okay.
Big deal. Huge deal, I think, because I don't see the appropriate level of depth there. And when you look at certain teams like the Patriots, who are signing every former starting offensive lineman they can seem to get their hands on, I wonder about the long-term depth there in San Francisco. And look, let's face it, he's a 12-year veteran. The guy is a war daddy. That guy goes out there and he fights his tail off each and every week. Not that others don't. But to me, that guy was the tone setter on that offensive line, and maybe next to Garoppolo within that offense, and dare I say, one of the tough guys and the people who would set the tone for the football team in general. You lose your left tackle, you better have some people that can slide over and do the job. I don't know if the 49ers have the ability to do that. And let's remember that while Jimmy Garoppolo, all the ladies may love him and he might be a panty dropper and all that kind of stuff, that guy is still, what, starting his 10th or 11th career football game. We realize that Jimmy Garoppolo is early on in his career, and is that going to cause him, Bert, to kind of start peaking a little bit or to be more aware of what's going on that left side? You'd love to be able to have someone who can handle it one-on-one where you don't have to have a back or a tight end over there to be able to help. I think this could be very problematic for the 49ers because I don't know how they patchwork that left tackle
spot. And so on Sunday they put Justin School, who's a 6th-round pick for them, into the game. There's, I think, the option, which all of us have sort of, I think if you know the team, you've sort of considered this a little bit, maybe moving Mike McGlinchey from right tackle to left tackle. I actually think they're going to be okay because I think the infrastructure there with the coaching is strong. It's Kyle Shanahan, another guy they've got in there, and I guess we can make the cocaine and stripper jokes if we want to, but Chris Forster, who had all kinds of issues in my – and look, like he had those issues before that video came out, and there's a reason why people were willing to put up with it for so long, and that's because he is a great offensive line coach. And so there's part of me that thinks – now he gets a little bit more involved, and I love what Kyle's done from an offensive standpoint – and I just I think that they're going to be able to find a way to patchwork this together, in part because they've got strength at the other tackle spot and Mike McGlinchey being there. They've invested a lot in trying to get the offensive line where it needs to be. And, I mean, I just think the effect of having a great offensive line coach, I think it's real, I think it's real. And so I think having Chris Forster, and I know that name hasn't come out up a lot, over the course of the last couple of years since he disappeared for obvious reasons, but I think the Niners can manage this and be all right.
I want to make the joke of the whole it's the first contract clause. Hey, if we're under 10 sacks midway through the year, we'll get you some coke and a really hot stripper. That'd be a great contract perk for someone.
No
like
question.
That
all right, so
I shouldn't make jokes like that.
It's okay. So our final injury situation, the New England Patriots, Isaiah Wynn, their left tackle, has turf toe. He had an MRI yesterday. It's still a little gray as far as, what's this going to cost him. And I will say this, Gresh. The Patriots have – I think you can judge them on their actions. And they told us via their own actions – that they were concerned about the offensive line in trading for Russ Bodine. Was Russ Bodine from Buffalo?
Yeah, and then they cut him. So, but right. it was really more right. of the trading right. for Cunningham
and Jermaine Illuminor and bringing in Marshall yep. Newhouse. And so they've told us. We don't need to speculate on this. They've told us they're concerned about the offensive line by going out and doing these things. Patriots, okay or not okay?
They're going to be okay, but you've got to be nervous about the situation because if it leads them to taking Joe Tooney and eventually having to move him to left tackle, then it hurts the interior of your offensive line. And, Bert, look at what happened in Miami, yep. right? Who were the three guys they didn't fiddle around with whenever they needed to move people around? They kept the guards and the center together because now more than ever, Tom Brady needs the ability to step up into the pocket. Yep. And if he can, when he can't do that, he is not as effective. And it's easy to say it, but it's tough to be able to go out and do it considering how quick they get the ball out. They go out of shotgun. There's a lot of things they do to be able to take care of Brady, but they need to make sure the middle is stiff. And if they're going to start moving people out of there to make that happen, then you've got a real problem. But that said, you know, they've coached around this stuff before. My worry is starting to be, Bert, around the individual player, Isaiah Wynn, because last year he tears his Achilles. This year, now apparently, he's got a turf toe, and he wouldn't have come out of the game for a pinky.
Right.
Like, my thought was, this guy's got a bad turf toe, and those are problematic. And then even as we speak, they signed free agent Caleb Benoch, B-E-N-E-N-O-C-H. You may have got the pronunciation better than me, but they keep bringing in these guys who have starting experience, and it seems like that's where, you know, we talked in the preseason, you and I, about offensive line and corner. It seems like that's where they're loading up this year, is at offensive line and at corner. I think they'll be okay, but I'm starting to worry that Isaiah Wynn is just going to – I'm not saying he's going to be Andy Katzen more, but, boy, he gets injured a lot.
This is another one where Foot injuries with big men, problematic.
Not good. Yep, and you get a guy coming off an Achilles who now turns around and has a turf toe.
Right.
That ain't
so
good.
So that's an issue, and I think it's another issue, too, like – and not to get too much into technical O-line talk because I don't want to get you too excited, but I mean the idea like this is like an undersized left tackle who needs his athleticism to make it work at that position, right, Gresh? Like that's fair.
Mm-hmm. That's
because
right.
if you're not 6 foot eight, you're not 6 foot
fair.
Nine. You need to be more athletic, and he is. But if this limits him in that area, does that sort of raise doubt about whether or not he can last as a tackle in the league? Right. That's a fair question to ask.
So. Very, and I think what's ultimately going to happen is Joe Tooney is probably going to get overpaid dramatically in the offseason at $15 million a year or so. Belichick ain't paying that. I think Wynn ends up a guard anyway.
So you have that. There were times last year, I think against Jacksonville and Detroit, where the Patriots' offensive line looked messy. And so I think it's maybe not okay in the short term, right? Ultimately, I think the scar will figure it out. The one point where this would be because I'm looking at their schedule and this is not murderer's row, right? But the next 3 weeks, dude, okay, you got the Jets, you got the Bills, and you have the Redskins. That's three aggressive defensive coordinators or defensive play callers in the mix, right? Greg Williams with the Jets, mm-hmm. who's got some guys up front, Leonard Williams, Quinnen Williams. The Bills come in, Sean McDermott's from that Jim Johnson tree, like very, very aggressive, and they've got a good defensive front with guys like Trent Murphy and Ed Oliver. And then the Redskins, for all of their issues, well, they still have Ryan Kerrigan, Jonathan Allen. These teams can hit the quarterback. And so, to me, that's what you have to watch is, I think ultimately when you get to November, December, Scar will figure it out, and I've learned not to doubt him. But at the same time, when they've had these problems in the past, there have been short-term issues. And so I think the management of the short-term issue with the healthier quarterback is really, really important.
And the best weapon they arguably have is Tom Brady to make sure to slide protection, to slide running backs over. Brady's great pre-snap. That goes a long way to making sure that old Rex Burkhead can help a tackle if they're struggling and, you know, giving somebody the old 1952 flipper as he's running out of the backfield.
All right, well, Gresh, good to have you back again. I'm glad we could get cocaine and strippers into the mix here, because that's the way we roll. That's the way we roll here. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming out, Gresh. Good to have you. We'll absolutely have you back.
The MMQB podcast is brought to you by Roman. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. That lower back pain, well, if you don't think about it, it'll just go away, right? The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/MMQB and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides that treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go to getroman.com/MMQB to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/MMQB for a free visit to get started. Getroman.com/MMQB.
All right, we're back. We're going to jump right into the mailbag segment. You guys are probably still getting familiar with how we're going to work this. So you guys know this is how we're doing it every week. We're going to be taking your questions via email. We're also going to be taking your questions via voicemail. We want to hear your voice on there. It's going to take a little while to build that part of it up, but I'm confident that you guys will respond and get there with us. So the email address is breermailbag@gmail.com. That's my last name, B-R-E-E-R. @gmail.com. If you want, leave me a voicemail. And if you leave me a voicemail, you get to hear your own voice right here on the podcast. Give us a call at 201-596-4346. That's 201-596-4346. For this segment, to read the emails, we bring in our producer, Shelby. Shelby, what we got?
This is from Ben. This question has popped up for me every once in a while, but it really came into fruition this offseason with regard to the Bears. Who actually owns the playbook? With Vic Fangio leaving, all the talk has been that the Bears' defense will be taking a step back. Since the playbook on a defense or offense is intellectual property, is there any sort of copyright on that?
So the question is whether or not the playbook stays in the building.
Yeah.
So these things are done very – it's an interesting question. These things are done very differently now. Most of it is digitized. Most of it is in iPads, and they've got the ability to wipe iPads out. But my understanding is the team has a right to keep the playbook, the same as the coach has the right to take the playbook with him out of the building. So I think in a case like this, certainly Matt Nagy would have the defensive playbook from last year. So like he'd be able to hold on to that. Vic Fangio would be under no restriction to bring it with him to Denver. What's interesting about the question, though, because I think that this is, you know, part of the whole equation with the Bears, because that was one of the big questions, was you're losing a guy who I think most people saw as a like a generational defensive coach in Vic Fangio. How far would they fall off? They're right now, they're fourth in total defense. Statistically, not quite where they were last year. But, I mean, fourth in total defense, third in scoring defense, pretty good. One of the reasons why Matt Nagy liked Chuck Pagano, the playbook isn't that different. Vic Fangio's NFL roots, some of his NFL roots were in Baltimore. He coached under Rex Ryan there, worked as a consultant there. A lot of what he does relates back to that Baltimore style of defense. And so I know this having talked to some of the players. A lot of the stuff that Chuck is teaching is very, very translatable for them. So that playbook may be sitting there on someone's desk. I know, like, or on someone's iPad. My guess is that if Chuck Pagano picked up the iPad and flipped through it, he'd probably be able to make sense of almost all of it.
This is from Brian. A tie is half a win. Are coaches just trained to not accept a tie in their DNA, even when it's the smart thing to do?
I had a really interesting conversation with somebody about this coming out of the first week. And, you know, the Lions and the Cardinals tied. And I think it was a player who I was with, like, on game day, on the Sunday the first week. And I asked what that felt like. And it's almost like you don't know how to react. Does that make sense, Shelby? Like, you don't, like you can't celebrate because you didn't win the game.
Yeah.
And you are disappointed, but it's not, like, it's just, I guess the kissing your sister reference is like, it makes sense, because it's just, like, it's, you put in an effort, and it's a lot of effort getting up to an NFL game, like, more effort than any other sport goes into the single games, just because there's so much time between them, and there's fewer of them than any other sport. And it doesn't kill you that you... that you tied, but it's also nothing to celebrate. So I would say that it's a little awkward. I think this awkward is the right word. I would say it's a little awkward for everyone.
All right. This is from Jonathan. Is Ron Rivera on the hot seat?
I think everyone in Carolina is under evaluation right now. David Tepper bought that team in the spring of 2018. Generally, the way these things work, and I believe he was like actually formally went through. I'm trying to remember when the deal formally went through, but he's still in the process of buying the team and getting his feet wet in 2018. And I would say that, like, the whole process of 2018, like most owners will take the first year and just sort of learn the business, lean on the people already in the building, get a feel for the way everything works, learn the league. And then in year two, generally, you sort of get to the point then when everyone's under evaluation. And I think that that's where the Panthers are now. So it's a critical year for Marty Herney. It's a critical year for Ron Rivera. It's a critical year for a lot of people in that building. I would say that my belief is that Ron and Marty have built strong relationships with David Tepper. So it's not like he's looking for a reason to fire them. But I would say that no one in the building right now is totally safe. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, we start hearing the name of, you know, Josh McDaniels connected to that particular place. I know Tepper wants a forward thinking organization, and he wants to be, like, you know, to some degree analytically driven. You see kind of like you see the business he comes from and how he made his money, and it sort of lines up. And so, you know, he'd be looking towards, like, okay, like, how do the best do it? And that's why I'm bringing Josh's name up. I think there'd be others obviously involved, but certainly I think that the part of the equation is creating like an organization that's very forward thinking and that's very, like, just ahead of the curve. And I think a big part of the next 4 months for Herney and for Rivera and everybody else who's currently in the building is proving that they're still there.
All right, this is from Theo. After Miami's losses to the Ravens and Pats, it's pretty apparent to the average fan that they are tanking. There are multiple reports that many players would rather be traded than remain on the roster. At this point, is the coaching staff using this circumstance to weed out the suboptimal players?
Theo, I would say suboptimal is not the right way to, not the right word. I would say it is a way to weed out the players who aren't totally engaged. And I think that that's such a huge piece of this. Again, like, here's a great example, okay? A great example would be a guy like Christian Wilkins, who was at Clemson, right? Their first round pick. And Clemson is very, let's just call it, Clemson's very millennial friendly, right? Like, not that it's not a demanding place, but it's very, like, built towards today's young athlete. And that's why they've won some recruiting battles with Alabama, because some people don't want to go play for Nick Saban. So, like, imagine you're Christian Wilkins, right? And you're coming from that, and that place produced results for you. You won two national titles. You became a first-round pick. And now you're going into a place that's tougher, that's colder, that's like a little more cutthroat, because just that's the nature of that program. And that's what they, that's what the Patriot people believe in. It's what Matt Patricia did last year in Detroit. It's what Flo's doing this year in Miami. And now all of a sudden you're doing, it's colder, it's meaner, it's tougher, and you're not getting any results. It's just, it can be a tough sell. And so I think one thing that you sort of figure out very quickly when you've got a program like that is who's in and who's out, who's engaged, who's not. And so I think that that will be the big piece of it. The talent assessment to me is separate from that. Like what you get going through this is you sort of figure out who's engaged and who's made to play in your program and who isn't. And, you know, quite honestly, like I said earlier, if you're a guy in this team, like it's hard to know if you're going to be there in 3 weeks or 3 months. And so, you know, it's a good test of professionalism. It's a good test of how locked in guys are. And I'm sure, you know, part of the vision here is Flo's going to find 10, 15 guys off of this year's team that may not be the greatest players, but could wind up being core pieces of what they're trying to build culturally there.
All right. This comes from Chad. Do you know if it's against the rules to give players stock options instead of signing bonuses or salary? For example, if they say Tom Brady takes a pay cut, but on the back end gets Kraft food stocks.
Yes, that would be against the rules. Absolutely. And there's been speculation about that with some of the quarterbacks. I mean, look, Tom Brady has his health and fitness center in Patriot Place. I mean, I can't get the rent on that, but you know, you would assume like maybe like if he were to take a break on that, then I think most teams would look at that and say, yeah, that's a salary cap violation. And it's interesting because before the salary cap, I think that stuff used to happen a bunch. Like the Niners used to have a reputation when they were great with Joe Montana and Bill Walsh, where, you know, the DeBartolos would take care of players in different ways. And like that would be, these would be like perks for the players on top of what they were making monetarily that would help, you know, keep the players on board with what they were doing and happy with their own personal situations beyond just the financial piece of it. So the answer to that question is yes. Any sort of stock options, any sort of promise of future ownership, any sort of real estate deals, anything like that would be deemed a salary cap violation.
And lastly, from Brandon, given the public reaction to the Dolphins being in tank mode, do you think down the road the NFL will have a draft lottery like the NBA?
So I actually like went back and I did a poll of, I think it was 13, 14 decision makers in May. And the reason I did it was because the NBA draft lottery got so much attention this year because they had Zion coming in. And so a lot of there was just great interest, and you saw like what a big deal it was that night, and you know ESPN did a good number on it and all that different stuff. So this seems made for a league that has turned frickin' the schedule release into into programming. It would seem to be tailor-made for, I mean, the NFL would, it would seem would lap this up. The response I got was interesting. I think it was 13 decision makers, 11 said no, they don't want it. And the reason why was because they felt like tanking wasn't an issue in the NFL. B, it's rare that you would have the sort of prospect that somebody would throw their season away for. That exists in basketball, of course, because the a star player can give you organizational stability for a decade, right? In the NFL, it's got to be a great quarterback, and very few quarterbacks are seen as can't miss. And then the third piece of it was like, well, would that cause like some unintended consequences? Like, do we have some teams on the back end of the playoffs? Like, all right, like I'd rather be in the lottery, you know, or if say you just take the bottom 10 teams, are there teams throwing games at the end of the year to get in the bottom 10? So that'll be part of the lottery. That piece of it, I think, for the NFL is problematic. You know, so I don't think it's coming. You never say never because this is something the league could monetize and everything else. But just based on what I've gotten from the football people, at least, it doesn't seem like there's a great appetite for it. Is that it?
That's it for this
week.
That's
it. Okay. And guys, keep the email. Shelby mentioned something to me on this. Keep the email short so we can kind of be a little snappy with it, too. That's something he brought up. I know I appreciate you guys' knowledge. I appreciate you guys going in depth with it. But if you can keep it a little briefer, we can kind of keep this moving. Again, if you guys want to interact with us on the podcast, the mailbag's the best way to do it. And you can do that by getting to us via email. And that's at BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Again, my last name, BreerMailbag@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail, which we'd love to hear you guys' voices, 201-596-4346. And I want your feedback in general, how you like the new format. We're going to have rotating co-hosts. Appreciate Gresh coming out this week. It was great to have him back on. Felt like old times. There's only one guy missing now. It was Lou Pellegrino, who was our producer back then. We love having Shelby, too, here. But it was great. I feel like we're going to be able to give you guys a wide range of co-hosts, a wide range of people that'll come in here and give you the best football insight on a week-to-week basis. I'm going to try to give you what I know too, but I want your feedback on how you guys feel like this is working out through 2 weeks, because we're happy to kind of keep adjusting and toying with it and everything else. We want to make this the best podcast from an NFL standpoint that you can get on a weekly basis. So you can get to me with that feedback on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer, on Instagram at Albert_Breer. And remember to listen to all of our podcasts. We're going 5 days a week now on the MMQB NFL podcast. That's where you can find this podcast and our Monday podcast, which is the deep dive podcast, which is everything coming off of the Sunday games. That's not the deep dive, right? That's just the Monday morning podcast that we're calling each other.
That is.
Okay. I'm still, my wires are still a little crossed with this. Tuesday afternoons, my podcast drops. Wednesday morning, you'll get the Jenny and Connor podcast. Thursdays is the deep dive podcast. And then Fridays, Jonathan Jones podcast will be there for you on the feed. You guys can get all of that. And, you know, there's a second feed too, if you're interested. That's the MMQB news podcast, which we've got quick bite-sized news podcast to kind of get you caught up on everything that's happened in the NFL. You know, those two separate feeds, subscribe to both of them. You can find those on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.